Last Sunday, we did a couple of lessons on the subject of holiness. We're going to continue with that theme this morning and talk about putting sin to death as that relates to pursuing holiness. First couple of lessons, we noticed that holiness is our responsibility. If we're going to live up to God's calling, you know, to be holy as I am holy, you know, then we have to make decisive action, as we talked about last week. And sometimes we try to excuse our responsibility in that regard. Sometimes we may say, well, I've been praying for strength in this or that area with some wanting some motivation or some strength to conquer. And what we'll note this morning is that, you know, we don't really have any magic wands that are going to help us not to have to do anything, that we have to take action in our lives. We certainly need to ask God for help on the path to holiness. And God expects us to be holy as He is holy. In Romans chapter 8, verses 12 through 13, the Scriptures tell us what actions we need to take. So then, brothers, we are not obligated to the flesh to live according to the flesh. For if you live according to the flesh, you are going to die. But if by the Spirit you put to death the deeds of the body, you will live. So these are actions that we're told to take, that we're not to live according to the flesh. And Paul also talks about this in Colossians chapter 3 and verse 5, where he says, therefore put to death whatever in you is worldly, sexual immorality, impurity, lust, evil desire, greed, which is idolatry. So both of these passages tell us that we're to put to death the deeds of the flesh. And to put these things to death does not mean that we're not ever going to struggle with them. It does not mean that once they're put to death, you know, we don't ever have to worry about it. You're never going to be tempted in that way ever again. But what God is telling us is that we need to kill the power and strength of these things in our life. We don't want these things to take over our lives. We don't want them to be ruling our lives. We don't want them to have power over us. And sin is trying to rule over us. Paul talks about that over and over. But we need to put to death the power of these worldly things. So that's what we want to talk about this morning. Simply, how do we kill the strength of these things that can have power over us? And it's not easy. I'm not saying that this is a simple 1, 2, 3, and once you do this, it's going to be an easy thing. But to put sin to death, there's necessary actions that we have to take in our life if we want to pursue holiness, as we've been talking about in the last couple of lessons. We certainly need to know right from wrong, and we're going to learn that from the Scriptures. Obedience is necessary. We have to start with that obvious point that we are required to do God's will. You know, we talked about Cornelius this morning, and Cornelius had an open heart to hear all the things that Peter would tell him to do. And his whole family was ready to hear that. He had an attitude of obedience. Whatever God tells me to do is what I'm going to do. And that's the kind of heart that we need to have as well. If we don't understand the concept that obedience is necessary, then we don't really get very far. There's a necessity of doing God's will, and if we don't do that, we'll never put sin to death. So one of the things we have to do is simply say, you know, I'm not going to have any excuses. I'm not going to blame others for my problems, and I'm not going to be looking at some other place that I can point a finger of blame. It's not always easy to be obedient to God's will. And it's also true that sometimes people are going to make that hard for us, that people are going to put a stumbling block in our way. But it's still our responsibility to put to death the deeds of the flesh. So how do we know what's right and wrong? Well, we have to learn the Scriptures. We have to turn to the Scriptures. It really doesn't make sense to say, well, in the middle of temptation, you know, say, hold on just a second, let me flip through here and see what the Word says about that. I mean, that we may do that in our mind, and we're flipping through the pages in our mind because we've already got it in our heart. We've got it in our mind. We need to study it so that we can reference it. But what I'm saying, it's too late when you're presented with a decision and you're not instantaneously going to know what to do. Reading the Bible and understanding it and meditating on it and having it in your heart is going to help you when it comes to temptation. But, you know, there's more to it than that. The Scriptures have given us a plan for what we need to do when Satan puts temptations before us. Paul used some questions in 1 Corinthians that can help us when we're trying to be holy. First of all, he said in 1 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 12, everything is permissible for me, but not everything is helpful. Another way to put that is, Paul's not saying that everything is permissible for me. I can sin in whatever way that I want to. I can do whatever I want. And that's not what Paul was saying, but he's saying that there's some things that may not in and of themselves be sinful, but they may not be helpful to me. Is it helpful? There are things that in and of themselves are not sinful. There are places we can go that are not sinful. There are things that we can do that are not sinful according to the Scriptures, but are they really beneficial for us? Simply because something is not an overt sin does not mean what we're about to do is good for us. And when we make decisions in our life, we ask questions, is this going to help me spiritually? Or is this going to help me physically? Is this going to help me emotionally? If we answer no to those questions, it may be something that we need to avoid. I've used the illustration before about, you know, Paul talks about running a race. And if Paul ran a race in a pair of combat boots instead of a pair of tennis shoes, you know, that may not make a lot of sense. Is it sinful for him to wear, you know, combat boots and an overcoat in a race? Well, it may not be sinful, but it's not very smart, because it's not going to help him win the race. He needs to dress in such a way that he's going to win. And when we're making decisions about ourselves spiritually, you know, many times people are asking the question, is this a thou shalt not in the Bible? Is there some regulation in the Bible that tells me I should not do this? Well, common sense sometimes will tell you that something is not a good idea just because it's not going to be real helpful for you. I've also used the illustration before, would it be wrong for me to take Jarell out to a late movie and dinner on Saturday night? No, she probably liked that, but we're not dating anymore, so we don't have to do that. But if we stay out really late on Saturday, that may make it really hard for me to stay awake in Bible class Sunday morning. And so sometimes we make decisions regarding what it is that we need to do. How is that going to affect me? And so I think you kind of get the point on that. In Corinth, we see that people were stating, since an action was not clearly defined as sin, then it was okay. And Paul's saying that you don't ask just if it's sinful or not. You need to ask if it's beneficial. You need to ask if it's helpful. There may be, you know, people in your lives that are a hindrance to you. It may not be a sin for you to hang around them, but the influence that they have on you, you realize that person is not somebody that's being helpful to me. They're pulling me in the wrong direction. When I'm around them, it's tempting me to participate in things that I don't need to. And so maybe I need to be aware of that. And so there may be television shows or certain movies and things that you may not say are overtly sinful, but may not be helpful to you in what you're trying to accomplish as a Christian. So cut out things that are not helpful. Paul also says in the same verse, everything is permissible for me, but I will not be brought under the control of anything. Is it something that brings me under its power? And that's another important question in an effort to pursue holiness and put sin to death. There are things that sometimes people classify as a gray area, meaning that the Scripture does not overtly say that such an action is sin, but sometimes people can really see a negative impact on people when you participate in these things. As Christians, we ought not to be brought under the power of anything except the power of the will of God. And sometimes we use a different word for this. We use the word addiction. And so we shouldn't be addicted to anything but God. We should be able to give up anything that would cause us to divert our focus from God. And there's lots of topics that have been debated for many years, whether or not it's acceptable for Christians to use drugs, alcohol, tobacco, and participate in gambling and those kind of things. And there's been so much that has been written and said about those subjects that we won't go into this morning, because what I want to present to you is, if we would apply the question that Paul posed to the Corinthians, is it something that will bring me under its power? Do those things have the ability to bring me under the power? Drugs, alcohol, smoking, whatever it is, do they have the power to make me be addicted to them? Yes, they do. And so Paul's saying, I'm not going to participate in things that are going to bring me under their power. Is it something that has the ability to enslave me? And if it does, it would probably be wise not to subject yourselves to that, because it's violating this principle. I will not be brought under the control of anything. And when people look at drugs and alcohol and the like, or gambling, you can see that every one of those things has the power to be addicting. And, it may be coffee, it may be caffeine, it may be other things in our lives that we don't want to talk about. That can we really do without them? Am I brought under the power of something? I was watching a television show last night where there was a housewife that got addicted to Lore tabs. And when she did that, she started embezzling from her work. And it was a true story. And when she started embezzling from her work to support her drug habit, she got fired. And then she was involved, she was present at a bank when it was robbed, and she saw how easy it was to rob the bank. And so she decided to do that herself, and she ended up robbing 4 banks, all to support her habit, all to support her addiction to prescription painkillers. And that's how it all started. And so you see the cycle that she was brought under, just because she violated this principle here of letting something control her. And so that is a principle that we need to be aware of. I will not be brought under the power of anything. In 1 Corinthians chapter 8 and verse 13, there's another principle, and does it hurt others? Will it hurt someone else? And specifically here, Paul's dealing with the subject of food and whether or not, food is permissible to eat certain types of food under the old law. And there were some confusion among brethren about whether or not they should do those things, and if it violated their conscience or violated somebody else's conscience, how do they deal with those things? Well, Paul made the point that it's permissible, just as we saw in the lesson this morning when the sheet was let down from heaven and God told Peter to kill and eat. God said that whatever God's cleansed, not to call unclean. So that principle is true under the new law, that those things that you couldn't participate in under the old law were permissible as far as the eating of food. But Paul said, if somebody else is going to be offended, if it's going to hurt somebody else, I'm going to give up some of my freedom to help someone else. Therefore, if food causes my brother to fall, I will never again eat meat so that I will not cause my brother to fall. So the principle here when making a decision is, does it hurt others? There are many activities that you might believe are innocent and pure, yet if you think about those things, you realize that they might hurt someone else. And Paul saying here he would partake in none of that, and none of his liberties if doing so caused someone else to sin. Might be other things, other activities that could be engaged in that might be detrimental to someone else. So, think about think about ourselves and when we come together in our assemblies. Have we ever thought that we might hurt others by not coming together? And certainly, I don't think that that's a neutral thing when we think about our responsibility to be here together, that you could just take it or leave it. But sometimes we don't think about the effect that we have on others by not being here in our classes or in our worship. We hurt other Christians that are here. We hurt the work of evangelism, and we hurt, you know, our influence on visitors that are here when we're not here. And so that's a question that we ought to consider. It's also a good question to consider before we speak. Is what I'm going to say, is it truthful? Is it going to hurt others? Is it going to be helpful? Is what I'm going to say going to be offensive or hurtful to somebody who's listening? So we sometimes hide behind the mantle of, well, we're just speaking the truth, but we don't always think about whether or not what we're saying and what we're doing is going to be hurtful. So this is one of the principles that Paul lays out to the Corinthians. Is it going to be something that's going to hurt someone else? And he says, if my food is going to cause my brother to fall, I'm not ever again going to eat it. He's taking his liberty and he's throwing that out the window and saying, you know, I know I'm allowed to do this, but if it's going to hurt someone else, then I'm not going to do it. It's the difference in a selfish attitude and a selfless attitude. Paul also says in 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 31 that therefore whatever you drink or whatever you do, do to God's glory. So this is really a great underlying principle for us when we're looking at how do we achieve holiness in our life. Is it something that glorifies God? And that's a very broad statement that Paul is making here concerning our actions. And he's specifically talking here about food and drink. But we need to think about this in an expanded way, that whatever it is that we do, we need to be glorifying God in every aspect of our life. We need to do things that show the example of Christ in our lives. Because we don't want to do something that's going to discredit that. And for someone to look at you and say, well, you know, he claims to be a Christian, but the way he talks and the way he acts, you know, he's not really being a good ambassador for Christ. You wouldn't want that to be said about you. And I know that there are times that I have behaved in ways or said things that would not have reflected in the best way on Christ, and that's not the way it should be. The nation of Israel was condemned because their poor actions caused the Gentiles to blaspheme God. That they would look at the Gentiles would look at the Israelites and not really get a good impression of what it meant to be God's people. And so we will be under God's condemnation if we're engaging in things that would cause others to say, well, if that's a Christian, you know, then count me out. We need to live lives of holiness and apply these principles. Let's return to the social questions that we were asking, talking about just a minute ago. Because a lot of times people will argue the so-called merits of drugs and drinking and smoking and gambling and so forth. And instead of arguing, you know, whether or not those things have any merit or if they are allowed, it's a much easier question to say, does participating in these things bring glory to the name of God or not? That's an easy question, isn't it? Do these things bring glory to the name of God? When I was growing up, when a commercial would come on TV that had alcohol on it, you know, my parents would tell me, now, Randy, Christians don't do that. And my parents also, whenever they were invited out and they were offered coffee, my parents didn't drink coffee. They've never liked coffee. And they they would say, no, thanks, we don't drink coffee. And so I kind of put two and two together that, well, you tell me that Christians don't do this and you're always refusing coffee, then Christians don't drink coffee either. And so that didn't have a big surprise to everybody. You're not supposed to drink coffee. So we were at a class that my dad was teaching and it was the first class that he had with them, and they offered him coffee. And I piped up and said, now, Christians don't drink coffee. And it kind of surprised my dad, and he kind of figured out why I might have said that. You know, where did you get the idea? Well, you said this. But the thing is that sometimes there are these things that people argue about when it comes to drinking. You know, my parents tried to instill in me at an early age that's not something that a Christian should do. And my dad would ask me the question, you know, because people would argue about, you know, whether or not you could drink. And he asked me, how big of an influence do you think I would be, you know, if I had a beer on the pulpit and I just drank out of that while I was preaching? Or if the brethren came in to a bar and saw me drinking? He said they would probably fire me, and the person that argues so hard for social drinking is probably the first one that would suggest that he be fired over that. And so the point that he was making is these things are inconsistent with somebody that is trying to live a holy life. That you are in danger of these things bringing you under their power. And one time in Dothan, my parents and some of the other people from the congregation had gone out to some fancy restaurant, and when they got there, the waiter gave them the wine list and was talking about all the different things that they could drink, and they declined that, and then the waiter saw them bow their heads and say a prayer before they ate. And then the waiter came back and apologized all over the place for making such a big deal about the alcohol. And why did he do that? He saw that there would be an inconsistency with someone who was praying before their meal and the imbibing of the alcohol. He was apologizing for going all through that when he saw that they were praying before their meal, which I always thought that was an interesting thing. I haven't seen that kind of reaction before. But it just shows you that sometimes the world knows better about things than Christians that will argue for how close can I get to sin without overtly sinning. The point here is that instead of arguing about the merits of how close you can get to sin, and how much you can drink, and how many drugs you can take, and how much you can smoke, and how much you can gamble, does participating in these things bring glory to God or not? If I go to an unbeliever's house to teach them the gospel and I'm smoking in their house, do you think that that's going to really help my chances of being able to teach them the gospel? You know, so what we need to see is that what we shouldn't be So concerned about arguing about is how much of something that I can do. We need to think beyond that. Paul said if it would cause somebody else to stumble, although it could be his liberty, he wouldn't do it. Paul said if our actions do not bring glory to God's name, it shouldn't be done. Paul said that if an action or decision was not helpful, it should not be done. Paul said if our actions would hurt others, it should not be done. And so those principles are easy to understand. Paul said if the activity will bring me under its power, I ought to avoid it. And so when you consider those questions, it gives us a really good guideline about what we should be thinking about is what's pleasing to God and what is not. And that's what Paul was trying to impart to his Corinthian readers, that they needed to think about these principles. And they needed to strengthen their faith. They needed to develop their conviction so that they could be the same way that Paul was in these areas. And not simply ask, is it sinful? But think about, is it going to bring me closer to God? Is it going to hurt my influence? Is it going to be helpful to others? Is it going to make me more holy? So we need to make a commitment to these kind of things. Jesus said in Luke chapter 14, verse 33, any of you who does not give up everything that he has cannot be my disciple. And so when Jesus said that, that really is a serious statement. That holiness that we're being called to is something that Jesus says you need to sacrifice many things. And Jesus also said some would have to sacrifice their family relationships. They would have to sacrifice friendships. And so we need to be serious about this commitment that we've made. Am I really willing to give up a certain practice or a habit that's keeping me from holiness? And many times the honest answer is no, that there might be something that we're not willing to give up. Or we have lived in such a way that shows that we're not willing to give it up. Because people will continue in sinful practices. We may say we want to, but we just don't make a serious commitment to change. Unfortunately, many times we have developed this just one more time syndrome, if you know what I mean. We justify our actions because I'm going to go on a diet tomorrow, so I'm going to eat this whole box of donuts tonight. You know, just one more time. Just one more. And when it comes to sin, you know, just one more look at pornography. Or just, I know I shouldn't do this, but I'm going to do this just one more time, and then I'm not going to do it anymore. Or just one more lustful look, or just one more day of not, you know, committing myself to learning more about the scriptures or praying, or just, you know, just one more lie. You know, I really have to tell this lie, but after this I'm not going to tell anymore. Just one more deception, just one more word of gossip. And we've all probably been there, and that one more, you know, turns into another and another. And we just lie to ourselves if we think that we're going to change when we have this attitude, this syndrome of, you know, just one more time. Proverbs 27, verse 20 says, Sheol and Abaddon are never satisfied, and people's eyes are never satisfied. This one more time syndrome doesn't work because, you know, lust and desires, the wise writer says, they're never full. They're never full. And so we have to make that realization. And every time we say yes to temptation, we make it harder to say no the next time. Every time we say yes to temptation, we make it harder for us to overcome that area of sin in our lives. The longer we continue in sin, the worse we make it for ourselves to try to get out. That's why it's so important if you're counseling somebody else or you're counseling yourself that you've been tempted in a certain area. You need to realize that the further you go in that area, that the harder and harder it's going to be to get out. Don't say yes to temptation. It just makes it so much more difficult. And those that have been involved in immorality and in other kinds of sins in their life. You know, they have been forgiven by God. They have made things right with their Savior. They've tried to be an encouragement to their brethren. You'll never hear somebody say, I'm so glad that I participated in sin for so many years because that's really helped me in my life. Now, it may have given them some experience and some wise counsel that they can provide to others that are struggling in the same areas, but they'll tell you time and time again that that when they participate in those things later on in their life, they still struggle with those things because they have experienced something or done something that they shouldn't have done, and it causes them to be tempted in ways that they wish would just go away. And when you say yes to sin, when you say yes to temptation, it makes it that much more difficult for you to stay pure and holy. So you may think you're doing well because, well, this is going to be the last time, but in reality, you've just added a few more degrees of difficulty in reaching holiness. We need to make it our aim not to sin, not to say, well, just one more time. If that's your strategy, you need to adopt something new and aim not to sin, not to say, well, I'm going to sin one more time. You know, too often our aim is simply, well, I'm going to sin not very much. And my aim is not to sin the big sins. And that's not the commitment that God has called you to. God didn't say, I'm calling you to sin not very much or not sin big. That we are in a war against Satan. And you can you imagine a soldier going into battle with the aim of not getting hit very much? I don't want to get shot very much. You know, a soldier with that kind of aim is not going to live very long. If that is his goal, to not get hit very much, that's not the right goal. Yet we are often like that soldier going into war and having a goal of I'm going to get hit by some bullets, but I don't want to get hit by a lot. You know, it's kind of a half-hearted attitude and lack of commitment. And we're going to be hit with temptations over and over if that's our attitude. We have a choice, and that choice should be to overcome temptation and make it our aim not to sin. Not just sin one more time. A preacher named Jonathan Edwards said it this way. He said, resolved never to do anything which I would be afraid to do if it were the last hour of my life. Think about that. He resolved never to do anything he would be afraid to do if it were the last hour of his life. And that is a good resolve, and it's a truthful resolution because you don't ever know when it's going to be the last hour of your life. You don't know when the Lord will come. You don't know when it will be our time to leave the world. We hear every day about those who lost their life in some way that's tragic or unexpected. And, you know, one day it could be us. So I hope you'll take away from this lesson to ask these questions before you make decisions. Is it helpful? Will it bring me under its control? Does it hurt others? And does it glorify God? And if we're diligent with these thoughts that Paul laid out for us, I think it will be very helpful for us to break sinful habits and break the power and strength of sin in our lives and help us to live lives of holiness. If we can help you in any way, to be obedient to the gospel of Christ, whether being buried in baptism, or if you started that and haven't been faithful, we can help you in any way. We invite you to come while we stand and sing.
Looking to thee from day to day, trusting thy grace along the way, knowing that thou wilt save me.